ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय टुडे वी आर रीडिंग फ्रॉम श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 1 चैप्टर 11 टेक्स्ट नंबर 13 Chapter entitled Lord Krishna's Entrance into Dwarka. Gopura Dwara Margeshu Krita Kautuka Toranam Chitra Dvaja Pataka Ghrair Antaha Pratihata Tapam. Gopura.
Gopura.
The gateway of the city.
Dwara.
Door. Margeshu. On different roads. Krita. Undertaken. Kautuka. Because of the festival. Toranam. Decorated arch. Chitra. Painted. Dvaja. Flags. Pataka Agrahai. By the foremost signs. Antaha. Within. Pratihata. Checked. Atapam. Sunshine. Translation by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. The city gateway, the household doors, and festooned arches along the roads were all nicely decorated with festive signs like plantain trees and mango leaves, all to welcome the Lord. Flags, garlands, and painted signs and slogans all combined to shade the sunshine. Purport. Signs of decoration in special festivals were also collected from the gifts of nature, such as the plantain trees, the mango trees, fruits and flowers. Mango trees, coconut palms, and plantain trees are still accepted as auspicious signs. The flags mentioned above were all painted with the picture of either Garuda or Hanuman, the two great servitors of the Lord. For devotees, such paintings and decorations are still adored, and the servitor of the Master is paid more respects for the satisfaction of the Lord. Actually, this verse and the next two verses describe the reception which was offered by the citizens of Dwarka for the Lord. So I'm just thinking, should I read them, the next two verses? Because they describe how the Lord was received. And tomorrow I have to give class, so probably I'll run out of steam. So maybe I can read it in. Then it's a different section after that. Text 14. Samarjita Maha Marga Rathya Panaka Chatvaram Siktam Gandha Jalai Uttam Phala Pushpa Kshatan Kurai. Translation. The highways, subways, lanes, markets and public meeting places were all thoroughly cleansed and then moistened with scented water. And to welcome the Lord, fruits, flowers, and unbroken seeds were strewn everywhere. Scented waters prepared by distilling flowers like rose and khyora were requisitioned to wet the roads, streets, and lanes of Dwarkadham. Such places, along with the marketplace and public meeting places, were thoroughly cleansed. From the above description, it appears that the city of Dwarkadham was considerably big, containing many highways, streets, and public meeting places with parks, gardens, and reservoirs of water, all very nicely decorated with flowers and fruits. And to welcome the Lord, such flowers and fruits with unbroken seeds of grain were also strewn over the public places. Unbroken seeds of grain or fruits in the seedling stage were considered auspicious, and they are still so used by the Hindus in general on festival days. Okay. Om Agyana Timirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurumalitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Ram Hare Ram Rama Rama Hare Hare. So in the previous chapter we heard Lord Krishna's departure for Dwarka from Hastinapur, and in this chapter we are hearing Krishna's entrance into Dwarka. So Krishna was entering Dwarka after a considerable amount of time, and because the residents of Dwarkapuri, they were very exalted devotees, so naturally they were feeling separation from the Lord. Actually, feelings of separation are considered to be the highest emotions in bhakti. So they were feeling separation from the Lord, and when Krishna reached the outskirts of the city, and Dwarka happens to be situated on the ocean, so when he reached outskirts, or let me see, I'm speculating, the border of the most prosperous metropolis. So when he reached the border, he blew his transcendental conch shell, which is called Panchajanya. Yeah. So he blew his conch shell, Panchajanya, and that signified his arrival. So these, like conch shell, is considered very auspicious, though it is the refuse of a living entity. So, but because the Vedas state that it is not contaminated, so therefore it's an axiomatic truth, as it's described in the Isha Upanishad. So cow dung is pure, conch shell is also pure. So Krishna blew his conch shell, and of course Krishna's conch shell is transcendental. And he blew his conch shell, and then all the residents of Dwarkapuri, it's described like they regain life. It's like a dead person. You've seen a dead body, and suddenly a dead body regains life. So that's very astonishing. So the residents of Dwarkapuri, it's like they regained consciousness, and they immediately went to the border to greet Lord Krishna with very auspicious articles. So when a very important personality arrives, then naturally, we greet that personality. And of course, these days, that's becoming less and less. But still, we see if a head of state comes, that head of state is greeted very nicely. A nice reception is offered in order to welcome them. So this is etiquette, this is culture. And in the Vedic times, such culture was practiced in its perfection. And in the previous verse, we heard the opulences of Dwarkapuri. Yesterday Keshava Prabhu spoke, and he spoke about the opulences of Dwarkapuri, which it's described that the city of Dwarkapuri was filled with opulences of all seasons. So can you imagine that? Like all the seasons are present in one time. So the opulences of all the seasons, every season has a certain opulence. So all of those opulences are present in one season. So this sounds very far out and extraordinary, but it is possible. When people live in harmony with the laws of nature, when people are in a state of Krishna consciousness, then naturally the nature reciprocates very nicely. And it's described that real opulence is in natural resources, in an abundance of natural resources. So, as mentioned in the previous verse, there were hermitages, orchards, flower gardens, parks and reservoirs of water, breeding lotus flowers all over. So that was very common. We have one Melbourne Botanical Garden, And very few people can visit that. Most of the people don't have time to go there. And so many people live so far away. But such kind of parks, even much better than that, were present in Dwarkapuri. And we heard yesterday how the Dwarkapuri is 94 to 96 square miles in diameter. But inside Dwarkapuri were 16,000 palaces, each 4 square miles or something. And along with that, in today's verse, it's also described how it's described that there were so many highways also inside. The city of Dwarkadham was considerably big, containing many highways, streets and public meeting places with parks, gardens and reservoirs of water, all very nicely decorated. So by Krishna's Achintya Shakti, this is possible. Krishna can do the impossible. So if we don't accept God's or Krishna's inconceivable potency, then Krishna has no meaning. So to be God means to possess inconceivable potency. So Achintya Bheda Abheda Tattva, the simultaneous oneness and difference, this is Achintya. Achintya means inconceivable. So Krishna can do the inconceivable. And we see even yogis, to our vision it seems they are doing inconceivable things, because we are not accustomed to seeing such yogic performances in our everyday life. So we know they are the 8 siddhis, Anima, Laghima, Mahima, Prapti, all those. So they are basically contradicting the laws of nature. But they are again their material potencies, material siddhis. But Krishna is the source of everything, so why can't Krishna also do something? So Krishna can also do inconceivable acts. So when important personality arrives, a very nice reception is offered. So in these two verses, we are hearing how Krishna was received. So the entire city was decked up. These days, if a politician arrives, say if the Prime Minister arrives, you know, they can't deck up the entire city. Maybe one or two streets or a few blocks. You know, that's about it. Because today's governments lack so much opulence. They can't afford to deck up the city. Like the London Olympics cost $19 billion. But now, you know, probably so many people are in debt. And the government is going to charge high taxes to recover that money. But back in the day, the government would have so much resources. They had so much funds that they were able to spend so much money on a reception. Even the people, they had so much opulences, because economic development is based on land and cows. So if you have a few cows and a bit of a land and some bulls, and that basically takes care of your economic necessities, and one can produce in abundance. So one doesn't need to depend on others. So in the Vedic times, people were living their life according to the Ishavasya conception, which means that they understood who is the proprietor of everything. So people understood that Ishavasya Vidam Sarvam, that God or Krishna is the proprietor of everything. And one has to use the resources of nature according to one's quota. So one's quota is allocated by providence and under the guidance of our authorities, we can actually find out what our quota is. So even the kings, they would govern on this principle. They understood that everything belongs to the Lord and they are simply caretakers. So the monarchs, they didn't have the mentality that okay, yes, everything belongs to me, and I'm in this political post so I can enjoy as much as I can, and I can amass a lot of money from the poor citizens. So they knew everything belongs to Krishna, and everything has to be used in Krishna's service to make people Krishna conscious. And of course, the modern executive heads, they lack this vision and this training and knowledge. So they see everything as meant for their exploitation. I just forgot the point I was making originally. Can anyone help me? Yeah, the opulence is... Yeah, I think so. So because the kings were very Krishna conscious and they knew that everything belongs to the Lord, they would act in that principle. Yeah, now I remember what it was. So they knew everything belongs to the Lord, and therefore they would, the way economic development was worked out was, there was no question of proprietorship or ownership. These days there is private ownership, public ownership, you know, different kinds of ownerships are there. And back in the day, to have, if you owned something, if you claimed ownership, that was a sin. Or even to charge interest was a sin. You know, you could not lend money and then charge interest on top of it. So that was considered to be a sinful activity, even in the Roman times. Even going back recently. So the kings knew that everything belongs to the Lord, so they would give the citizens some land. And the citizens were aware that this land is given to me by the king, and it ultimately it belongs to Krishna. And they were given natural resources like cows, bulls, and they would plow the land and, you know, milk the cows. And in that way they were able to live self-sufficiently. They were not dependent on everyone. In, as Kesha Prabhu was mentioning, that in today's cities and societies, we are living in cities and the food is grown outside. So 97% of the people are, or more than 50% of the people globally are living in cities. 50% of the population of the world is living in cities. And more are migrating to cities. So cities are becoming very congested and polluted places. And the food is grown by a tiny percentage of the population. And even that is very highly mechanized after the Industrial Revolution, and, you know, agriculture was so much revolutionized. So even that is highly mechanized. So a very tiny proportion of the population is engaged in agriculture. And the rest are, you know, in cities and working in industries. So in that way, the food supply is controlled by a few people. And everybody is charged very high prices. It's all artificially manipulated, and because of mismanagement, people don't get enough food, or it's not good quality, or it's very highly priced. But back then, everyone was independent. So that's how the kingdoms back then were governed, and people were happy, and they were actually independent. They were not dependent on so many other people. Today people say that they are independent and free to do what they like to do, but in reality it's not. We are actually very tightly controlled by higher powers in our society, by banks, and so many other powerful lobbies. We are actually controlled in so many ways. So we have lost our independence. But people are so illusioned that they think that we have never been so advanced and free to act before. Society was very, very restrictive and very controlled by a monarch. But the reality is that people are more and more controlled. In the name of democracy, they are controlled, they are fully controlled. So therefore the citizens had so much opulence, and even the king had so much opulence, that they were able to throw such a lavish reception. So it's described here how the streets were decorated with festive signs, flags, and the flags had either Garuda or Hanuman on them. And even on Arjuna's chariot, the flag had, I think, Hanuman on it. And that signified victory. And Hanuman on the flag was actually making war cries. quite inconceivable. The Hanuman on the flag was making war cries to shatter the hearts of the enemies. So they were not ordinary flags. So there were festive signs like plantain trees, mango leaves. These days, as it was mentioned in the previous purport, that inauspicious trees are very prominent. They are pious trees and they are impious trees. So all living entities are situated in different modes of nature. And they are pious and impious to different degrees. So trees like mangoes, banana trees, and trees which basically yield flowers, very fragrant flowers and fruits, are considered to be very auspicious because one can benefit from them and one can use such kind of trees in the service of the Lord. Like here we have this tree in the courtyard. It's a very pious tree. It's very pleasing to see. It's bearing flowers now. And these days we find a lot of impious trees. So impious trees are planted on the roads basically to reduce the carbon dioxide. all the pollution generated from cars. So much pollution is generated, and those trees reduce the carbon dioxide levels. Carbon monoxide. Thank you. So such kind of trees and leaves and garlands, painted signs and slogans, all combined, they all combine to share the sunshine. And then it's described the highways, subways, lanes, markets and public meeting places were all thoroughly cleansed and then moistened with scented water. And to welcome the Lord, fruits, flowers and unbroken seeds were strewn everywhere. So these days we lack such kind of opulences. And real wealth means to possess grain, animals, land, and gold, silver, these kind of metals. If one possesses these things, that's considered real opulence. Not mobile phones, cars, or shares or different kind of things. Because these things lose their value very quickly. Or computers. You buy a computer now, after a few months, it's half the price. But this is what constitutes real opulence. And the progress of a civilization, or the opulence of a civilization, was determined by such kind of opulences. And we even see in the marriage of Devaki and Vasudev, that the dowry which was given by Devaki's father, Devaka, was inconceivable to today's standards. Devaka donated maybe thousands of elephants, and they were decorated with golden ornaments and gold and golden garlands, and tens and thousands of chariots with horses, and thousands of cavalry and 200 maid servants also. So this was the opulence back then. And sometimes in festivals, the citizens would celebrate festivals by throwing yogurt or milk on each other. It's like even on festivals here, we have a festival and then the remnants of the Lord are thrown to all the devotees in the temple room. But back then that was done on a much more larger scale. So they had so much ghee, so much milk, so much yogurt that they could just throw it on each other. These days, if we do that, sometimes people. One time, one person asked me, one new person, he came to the temple and there was an abhishek going on, and then he asked me, like, why are you wasting so much milk? Why are you wasting so much yogurt and honey? These things are hard to find and they're so expensive, and you're just, you know, wasting it. Just pouring it on top of a deity. So they cannot understand that this is what it means to offer, you know, a nice festival, a nice celebration, a nice welcome. So when someone is welcomed, generally someone very respectable is welcomed by an aarti. So we offer incense, the lamp, then water, a cloth, flowers, and a chamra or peacock leaves or peacock feather. So this is a very auspicious welcome and a reception. So Krishna was also welcomed like that. And even when Dhruva Maharaj, after coming back from the forest, he was very nicely welcomed by all the citizens, and even by his father. King Uthanapad was his father, yeah. And he was welcomed very nicely. So this is a Vedic reception. Of course, these days, because of a lack of culture and etiquette, in Kali Yuga, people don't know how to, the residents of Kali Yuga don't know how to welcome someone. Very important. Generally, it's, you know, how are you going, mate? Or in a Vedic reception, if someone came to your house, even if it's your enemy, they were to be welcomed very nicely. They were to be received very nicely. So depending on one's means, one had to welcome the guest according to one's means. And one time Krishna went to Mithila, and there he was received by he was invited by two personalities. His what their names? Shruta Dev and does anyone remember? So anyway, he was welcomed by two personalities, and this one personality was the king of Mithila. So Mithila today is in Nepal. Bahulashva, thank you. Bahulashva and Shruta Dev. So he went to Mithila. Mithila is the place where I think Lord Ram married Sita. Yeah, Lord Ram married Sita. So Mithila is the place, and Mithila today is in Nepal. So it was a very tranquil place. These days we don't know. Every place is changing. So when Lord Krishna reached the outskirts, he was greeted by Bahulashva and Shrutadev, and they both invited him to his home. So for us that would be a problem if two people simultaneously they invite us to their home, and then we'll have to decide whose place to go to. Or in one day we can't go to two devotees' house, because if you're going to someone's house for lunch or dinner, that means it's pretty heavy. You'll be nicely fed. But Krishna doesn't have that problem, because Krishna can just expand himself. So then Krishna said, no problems, I'll come to... And Bahulashva was the king, and Shrutadev was a poor brahmana. So then simultaneously Krishna went to Bahulashva's place and Shrutadev's place. So Bahulashva received Krishna very opulently, because he was a king, he had the means. So he was, you know, brought in on a royal carpet, offered a very nice seat, and he was fanned by so many servants. He was offered an exquisite meal, and he was offered a nice place to rest, and he had, you know, servants who were dancers who were dancing in front of Krishna for Krishna's pleasure. And there, Bahulashva, he offered Krishna a straw mat, you know, to sit on, a glass of water, offered him some sweet words, and he was dancing himself for the Lord. So in this way, according to one's means, one has to offer reception to a guest. And Krishna is Bhava Grahi Janardan. So Krishna accepts the sincerity of purpose. Krishna accepts the devotion. Krishna is not so much attracted by the facility in itself. Because Krishna is unlimited and He is the source of everything. So for Krishna, what we are offering really doesn't attract Him. It's with the devotion with which it is offered which Krishna is attracted to. So Krishna says, Patram Pushpam Phalam Toyam Yome Bhakta Prayachati Tad Bhakti Uparayatam Ashnami Prayatatmanaha. If one offers to me with love and devotion a leaf, a flower, a fruit and water, I will accept it. So Krishna is accepting the love and devotion of the devotee. So they both were offering with pure devotion. So then Krishna very kindly accepted both equally. So according to one's means, one has to receive someone. But the principle is that one has to still welcome someone very nicely according to one's means. And even if an enemy comes to one's house, one has to welcome them. So these days that's very hard to conceive of. Because the enmity is so great in Kali Yuga. Over trivial things, people become enemies. And that enmity lasts for so long, sometimes lifetimes. Sometimes their whole life, and sometimes that enmity is passed from generation to generation. And even nations today are fighting, and people have that animosity. You know, it's been carried on from one generation to the other, it's passed on. And if the opposing camp came to their house, there's no way they would receive them very nicely. And these days, out at people's house, it's written on the gate, beware of dogs. Beware of the dog. So, you know, you can't even enter, what to speak of getting a reception. If you enter, you know, you're at risk of being bitten by a dog. There's a CCTV camera monitoring. And there's an electric gate or electric fence. You can't enter. What to speak of getting a reception? But in the Vedic times, saintly persons had free access to people's homes. A saintly person would come to the house of a grihastha on the pretext of begging something, begging some milk or some grains. But the whole idea was, they come to beg, but in exchange, they give transcendental knowledge. So this is the example of Shukdev Goswami. It's described in the first canto that he would go to a grihastha's place or householder's place, and he would spend only enough time. The time would be enough time for a cow to be milked. So in that time, he would give them some, you know, spiritual knowledge, try to encourage them, because most of the people are grihamedis. So he would give them spiritual knowledge and try to elevate their consciousness. So Prabhupada has dovetailed that today by book distribution. So we can't go to people's homes and, you know, ask for some milk. After I got my second initiation, the tradition is after your initiation one should give Guru Dakshina. So I thought I'll go around the block and ask people for Guru Dakshina. And I got a mixed response. Some people were, I said I got initiated today, and so the tradition is to give our spiritual master some gift. Can you give me something? Whatever you want to give. Whether it's money or fruits or whatever. So some people gave me fruits and they gave me things like that. And then a few houses, they got so angry. Especially your next door neighbor. And he shouted at me and slammed the door. some people say, you know, just get out and, you know, why are you begging? So people these days cannot appreciate someone coming to your home and begging. Because the brahmanas and the sadhus, they themselves have corrupt, in one sense, they corrupt the system. So, and but the culture was the sadhus and the saintly persons, they would go door to door and beg people for something, for their own benefit, out of their own humility. So these days Prabhupada has dovetailed that by giving people prasadam and by giving them books. So when we give someone a book, we can ask them for a donation and not be shy about it, because they feel they're buying something. And what donation they give is actually for their eternal benefit. Because that money is offered to Krishna and used for Narayan's purpose. And then it becomes purified and they also get transcendental knowledge. And Prabhupada said, if anyone touches my book, you know, he'll get a human birth. What to speak of reading it and appreciating it. So I'll leave it there. Any questions or comments? I think now you can get even more benefit because these books are the essence of Vedic knowledge. Back then, depending who's coming to your house, their devotees are also of different gradations, the different sadhus. Some are mystics, some are bhaktas, some are jnanis. So depend who comes and what level of realization they have. They can impart certain level of knowledge. But today, if we give someone a book, a Bhagavad Gita or any of Prabhupada's books, they establish Krishna as the Supreme Lord and we are the Lord's servant. So this point comes out very, very strongly, which is the essence of Vedic knowledge. So they're even, I think, greatly benefited. Anyone like to add on that? It's much more potent. Unless you're getting like Shukdev Goswami, you know, visiting you, or some very great personality, then they'll give you the essence of knowledge. And even then, we might not be ready to hear. Sometimes we don't want to hear. But even when we meet someone, they might not be ready to accept Krishna. But if they accept the book, they read it one day, they might accept Krishna. At least they believe it. Krishna is supreme. They get that. Thank you very much, Srila Prabhupada. Yeah.